Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. St. Croix offers much more than a sugar plantation. Hi friends, welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Naomi joining you for our second day of the April history article, St. Croix Sugar Museum. Now, yesterday we started out in this tiny little island in the Caribbean talking about the history of the place. And it's a pretty fascinating history with some very bright moments and some very dark moments as well, as most history tends to have. And also joining us in the studio to continue our discussion, we have Bill and Amanda. Welcome back.
Hello.
So, Bill, tell us a little bit about what we learned yesterday.
Well, yesterday we were introduced to the Estate Wim Museum on St. Croix, and I got a description about the grounds there as far as it was a plantation for a couple of, you know, for a long time, and it's existed for a couple of hundred years. But there was the plantation house, slave quarters, outlying buildings, and it fell into disrepair for a long time, but then it has been restored.
That's correct. And it is a place that offers tours and educational programs and all kinds of things so that people can really understand more about the history here. And the history is, it's fascinating.
Very, very interesting. We see that it was established or taken over by the Danes in 1733, and they used it to grow sugarcane. Mm-hmm. And which was very prosperous, but like we mentioned yesterday, at the expense or a sacrifice of many different slaves that lived there. But they did do very well at the time.
Right. So, of course, they were very competitive in a world where slavery was acceptable. But fortunately, slavery was abolished in 1848, we learned.
Yes, it was abolished, and it was good. It freed the slaves, emancipated them. However, what it did impact was that then the sugar industry pretty much died mm-hmm. because St. Croix could no longer be competitive on the world market.
Right. And this is something that I think, to me, it actually resonates even today, the idea that companies can be so concerned about getting a bottom line on prices that they're willing to make some big sacrifices. It's a danger, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's moved from while there might not be blatant slavery in certain places, a lot of companies will actually use incredibly low-cost labor in third world countries
right.
where it is near slave conditions, and they take advantage of the people and they hardly pay them much just so they can be competitive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, slavery still exists today as well. Mm-hmm. And so reading a story like this, it's a good reminder to me to be aware of what's going on in the world around me, where I'm getting my products and who I'm supporting and so on. It's worth doing a little research.
Right. And I think it's interesting that, you know, the sugarcane industry declined, as does things in history. So even though people are trying to search for the bottom line, how long will that last
right.
at the sacrifice of people's lives?
And that's why, you know, as a history article, this is really instructive for our listeners because we can apply some of these lessons to today. If there are products in the marketplace that seem incredibly cheap, then I really need to look at it and say, why is this thing so cheap? And maybe make me dig deeper and say, who is being taken advantage of?
Right.
And do I want to participate in this?
Yeah, it's amazing how travel can really broaden our understanding, not just of the past, but of the present too. And so visiting a place like Wim with the Sugar Museum and so on, it tells us a lot about what used to happen and maybe echoes what can still happen in parts of the world today. But looking again at their past, let's just turn to page 43 and have a glance at this sidebar part from yesterday talking about Wim's past, we actually are discussing the Great House. And what would the Great House be referring to?
Oh, that's where the plantation owner and family would live. So there would be, you know, maybe the husband and the wife and definitely maybe some relatives and children. So maybe there would be 10 to 15 family members living there. Most of these plantation great houses were large, opulent places. They were quite luxurious, and they also would be staffed by a good number of slaves who did all the cooking and the cleaning in these great houses.
Right. So it is quite a beautiful house from the sounds of it.
And we see a picture of it at the bottom here, just a little glimpse of it, you know, page 43. We see that the great house was built about 1760, and it was rebuilt several times. So they, you know, they're earning quite a lot of money, so they want to maybe change where they're living and rebuild it a few times over.
Right. There's also the consideration that maybe some of these owners were not originally from the area, and perhaps they had to learn about the climate and what kind of materials worked best and so on. And so, for instance, there's an oval shape to the house that didn't come until 1793. It's 95 feet long, 35 feet wide, with 16-foot ceilings. Sounds just gorgeous.
Yeah, it is. You know, they would almost build these things like palaces. And part of the reason is, yeah, many of the plantation owners would come either from Europe or from the United States, and they could actually build these palace-like structures for a very low cost. That's why they did it.
Okay, so yeah. To describe the building a little bit more.
Well, it sits next to tamarind trees. Tamarind trees, they have the green leaves, but they also have like a brown pod with black seeds inside of it. It contains three large rooms, an office gallery, and a wing that was originally a separate kitchen.
Okay, and of course, it's flanked by numerous outbuildings, so there's different buildings that are sort of a part of the estate that are to the sides a little bit. And the walls are 30 inches thick, made of different kinds of material than you might expect for the average Western-style home. Cut brain coral, that's a type of coral that was grown in the area. Limestone, rubble, bonded by a mortar containing, surprise, surprise, molasses. How interesting. It's even part of the building.
Yeah, they used the molasses to be the glue to hold all of these materials together. And then it sits on 12 acres that remain of a once thriving estate. Now, I will mention this. Most of these plantations, Wim's, at that time when it was fully operating, is going to be several hundred acres.
Mm-hmm.
But right now they're only using 12 acres of this once thriving estate. And it was occupied by 12 owner families over the course of, looks like, 190 years.
Okay. Now, Bill, you hadn't actually visited this plantation in particular, but you have been to plantation buildings before.
Yes. I actually visited some plantations in South Carolina. I actually lived in South Carolina for a short while. And outside of Charleston, South Carolina, which was one of the capitals of the South, and it was a cotton plantation, and this reminds me of the owner's home. It was a big, beautiful white home with large pillars out front and a huge porch, and it was big, had those high ceilings, and it had, you know, it was such a contrast. Then we also had a tour of, for instance, then the kitchen was separate. It was a separate building where the slaves, usually some women slaves, would do all the cooking. That was a separate building where they cooked in, and then further on were the slave quarters. And the slave quarters were just one-story, very Spartan brick structures that they lived in. I don't even think they had windows. They just it was just brick, and then they had a door. And you would have, you know, just a one-room place where maybe 10 or 12 slaves would live in. So it was a complete contrast.
Right. And so that was typical of these types of estates. And again, this is why this is on the route if you visit the UN's slave route sites of remembrance and sort of see the history of this industry. It's really fascinating stuff. Again, this also wasn't the only plantation in St. Croix. So let's continue our reading on page 43 to find out more.
Local flora. Not far from Wim is the 16-acre St. George Village Botanical Garden, built around the ruins of another old plantation, the Estate St. George. It, too, is on the National Register of Historic Places. The water mill was built around 1830 and destroyed in an 1867 earthquake. Surviving are the blacksmith shop, the village bakery, lime kilns, water flumes, and the ruins of the sugarcane factory. Today, the grounds are dominated by more than 1,500 species of native and exotic plants. More about the island. St. Croix is the largest and least developed of the U.S. Virgin Islands. It covers 84 square miles and has about 51,500 residents. The western part of the island is rainforest. The eastern end is rocky and arid. It often is overlooked next to its more famous sister islands, St. Thomas and St. John. They are about 40 miles to the north.
Okay, so there's a lot more to see as we continue our tour. Remember, this is both history and travel. We want to enjoy ourselves while we're visiting this place as well. Where else can we go to, Amanda?
Well, not far from Wim is the 16-acre St. George Village Botanical Garden, and it was built around the ruins of another old plantation, the Estate St. George.
I think that's a really nice idea, to take these old buildings and then to sort of develop them in a way that changes it a little bit. You know, there is that side of history, but also to say, hey, this is a great place to build this garden. They can visit the ruins too, but why not add, you know, this added interest?
Yeah, great idea, because the Caribbean, of course, is very tropical, so you have the ability to grow many types of plants and trees, and then there would be a certain charm to it to have these old buildings, some old ruins, and then some exotic plants to walk around in. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like people agree it's a great idea, because it's also on the National Register of Historic Places, so the government is also recommending this as a great place to visit if you want to understand the past of St. Croix. Now we continue with the water mill.
Right. The water mill was built around 1830, and it was destroyed in an 1867 earthquake. So we may see ruins of that too. But surviving are the blacksmith shop, the village bakery, lime kilns, and water flumes, and the ruins of the sugarcane factory.
Okay, so a lot of this has been destroyed or it started to deteriorate, but we can still understand some of what life must have been like. So, for example, a blacksmith shop, what is that? I don't think we have those anymore.
No. The blacksmith would actually make horseshoes for the horses so they could walk around and not damage their feet. So they'd just be in there taking steel and pounding away at it.
So the former version of a mechanic shop.
Yeah. Today's version fixes motorcycles.
Mm-hmm. The village bakery, of course, today would be a 7-Eleven, I guess. Mm-hmm. But what is a lime kiln?
Well, lime, first of all, we see it in our specialized terms. It's a white powdery substance, and it's used for building materials or improving the earth. It's a chemical that the ground needs.
Right. So not limes like the kind that are like lemons.
Right.
It's a bit different.
Very different. Yes. And, of course, the kiln is a large oven used to bake bricks or clay objects. So it's a place where they use the lime and cook it, bake it.
Well, we had talked about it in that sidebar as far as the walls being made of those materials, and they actually would make bricks out of lime and some other substances.
And we also saw that they added some lime to the sugar as well, I guess, to preserve it. So a very useful chemical. Of course, they needed to put it into a form where they could use it. So therefore, they had these lime kilns. Then water flumes, what's that?
Well, in the ground, we think of a canal we would use to transport things by water. A flume is actually built above ground. We would take wood and actually build like a passageway to have water flowing through it. It makes it easier to transport items around the grounds.
Okay. And then, of course, today, the grounds, this area, it's not primarily for these factories and shops.
No, I mean, the title of this paragraph was Local Flora, right? And so we see that today the grounds are dominated or ruled by more than 1,500 species of native and exotic plants.
It sounds really beautiful. It's very appealing to think about walking around in sort of history, but with these beautiful flowers. I would really enjoy touring there, I think.
Sounds very serene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and peaceful.
Yeah, but also I think a lot of food for thought, mm-hmm. which is nice. You know, you can walk around and sort of imagine a little bit, but also enjoy the beauty that's there today.
Yeah.
It sounds like a great place to visit. But there's more to it. Can we understand a little bit more about this island?
Yes. As we mentioned yesterday, St. Croix is part of the U.S. Virgin Islands, and it is the largest, but it is the least developed of the islands.
Okay, so as we turn over there to page 44, we learn that. And it also covers 84 square miles, so it's not enormous.
No, it's not enormous, and it's funny to read about the population, 51,500 people. That's not a lot of people on St. Croix.
So it may be the largest of the Virgin Islands, but it's still a very tiny place. Now, the western part of the island is rainforest, so of course, very wet, very humid. But what about the eastern end?
Very contrasting. The eastern end is rocky and arid. And arid means it's very dry and with little rain, which is very different from a rainforest.
Definitely. So one is humid, one is arid, and those are sort of the opposites there when it comes to climate, one being very damp, one being very dry. In fact, many people ignore St. Croix.
Yeah, it's actually overlooked, we say here, next to its more famous sister islands. Overlooked means, well, that not a lot of attention is paid to it. And more attention is paid to St. Thomas and St. John.
Which are what?
St. Thomas and St. John are the islands that are about 40 miles north of St. Croix.
And actually, the reason for that is because of the tourist industry. More larger companies actually invested more money in St. Thomas and St. John, building resorts, and so they actually get a heavier cruise liner traffic on those two islands.
Okay, so it's bigger, but it's a little bit on its own. People mm-hmm. kind of forget it's there, but I'm glad we haven't forgotten about it because it's been so interesting to learn about St. Croix so far. And actually, there's a lot more to do than just learn about history. So let's find out as we continue our reading there on page 44.
Attractions on land and under the waves. Colorful Christiansted on the north coast is the largest city on St. Croix. It features a historic district on the waterfront with more than 100 brightly painted buildings from the 18th and 19th centuries. It is one of the best preserved towns in the Caribbean. An old fortress, Fort Christiansvern, was completed by the Danes in 1749 to protect the island from pirates, privateers, and slave uprisings. Buck Island Reef National Monument, off the north coast, is one of the premier diving snorkeling spots in the Caribbean and the number one tourist attraction on St. Croix. It covers more than 19,000 acres, mostly below water, and preserves one of the finest marine gardens in the Caribbean. It features imposing walls and gardens of coral, concentrations of red, purple, and blue sea fans, spectacular elkhorn and brain corals, and colorful fish. It is 5 miles from Christiansted and 1.5 miles offshore.
So there is more to St. Croix than history. We discover colorful Christiansted on the north coast. And what is that?
It is the largest city on St. Croix, so where a lot of action is taking place. It features an historic district on the waterfront with more than 100 brightly painted buildings from the 18th and 19th century.
Okay, it sounds like some of the other Caribbean locations we've mentioned and advanced in the past, where it sounds like everything is quite colorful and alive and bright, and it really sounds like a beautiful place to explore.
Yeah, and these places have their charm because there is some life there, and there's a lot of movement. Now, let's keep it in perspective. We're not talking about Shanghai or Hong Kong. We're talking about 30,000 people in Christiansted. And so it's a little bit different, but it just hugs the waterfront, and a lot of their economy revolves around the sea.
Mm. Okay. So those brightly painted buildings and being so reminiscent of the past, they remind you of what things were like from the 18th and 19th century. We also discover that it's very well preserved.
That's right. It's seen as one of the best preserved towns in the whole of the Caribbean.
Okay. So that would make it worth visiting already, just to have that really better understanding of what a town would have been like 100 or 200 years ago.
Yeah, it's great. You know, while it's been overlooked, I think that's part of the beauty of St. Croix. It hasn't changed.
Right.
They don't have big, huge buildings there now.
Right. Run down or taken over by resorts and so on. It sounds much more appealing to me, actually, than the sister islands with their resorts.
One of the things that would appeal to me is this old fortress, Naomi.
Mm.
Yeah.
Fort Christiansværn. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But it was completed by the Danes in 1749. Why do they have this fort there?
Well, they needed to protect the island from pirates, pirateers, and slave uprisings.
Yeah. Now, I want to cover this. We know what pirates are, right? They look like Johnny Depp and they're charming and handsome and funny.
Well, the pirates are the guys who are really outlaws. They're not on anybody's team. They're just out in it for the money. They're trying to make a way for themselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, privateers are a little bit different. Privateers are actually – they are independent ship owners who are hired out by governments – to carry out missions, whether it might be a trade mission or, even worse, might be to attack another country's ship. So, for instance, say if America had a problem with Spain, but they didn't want to get involved with Spain in a war, they would hire me, Captain Bill. They'd say, okay, Bill, you go attack this Spanish ship. So I would then be the privateer. They would pay me to do that.
So it's sort of a pirate for hire.
A pirate for hire.
Nice.
Okay, very interesting profession to have. But the last one, of course, was slave uprisings. That points again to the questionable history of a place like St. Croix.
Right. Well, an uprising we see is an act of opposition where maybe they would even use violence to go against somebody like a riot. And so we see that maybe the slaves have said, enough is enough. You know, mm-hmm. we don't want to work these hours and not get paid for it. We're not well treated. And so they get together as a group and try to protest or definitely make their words heard.
Right. And it sounds like eventually they did, because as we learned yesterday, slavery was abolished in 1848. So we know that they did make progress eventually in protesting the unfair treatment. But of course, it was in the Danes' best interest to try to avoid any kind of conflict at all. So they had this fort, which I'm sure would be fascinating to visit. But also interesting to dive into would be what's at the top of the next column.
Yeah, we see here some leisure activity. Buck Island Reef National Monument off the north coast is one of the premier diving and snorkeling spots in the Caribbean. So, yeah, premier means it's one of the best places.
Mm-hmm. And I would love to go there. It's the number one tourist attraction on St. Croix. And so I can imagine a lot of people would come to the area to do some diving and snorkeling and just include St. Croix like as a day trip, just as a place to head over to check out. And so anything with a big coral reef is worth exploring, especially if it's also well preserved.
Yeah, I actually did some snorkeling when I was on those cruises, and I would say, one, the water in the Caribbean around these islands, it is just crystal clear. It's just this light crystal blue, and the snorkeling was wonderful. The fish are just amazing.
Oh, I would love to do that. Mm-hmm. It sounds incredible. Okay, well, finally, that National Monument, Buck Island Reef National Monument, we have a bit more of a description of it.
Right. It covers more than 19,000 acres, mostly below water. So definitely a place that you want to go and snorkel or scuba dive in. And it preserves one of the finest marine gardens in the Caribbean.
Oh,
Oh, Naomi's getting excited.
I'm getting so excited. It features imposing walls. So imposing meaning very noticeable, very large. And a sea wall is where the island sort of drops off and you can dive along it and check everything out that's growing there. And so gardens of coral, concentrations of sea fans, beautiful different kinds of coral and growth and fish. And it just sounds incredible.
Yeah, and it's amazing, teeming with life, we might say. So, and it is 5 miles from Christiansted and 1.5 miles offshore.
So head there, go for the diving, and stay for the history, maybe.
Yeah. This will be a great place to go for. I can just picture taking some boat rides and just cruising along in the water there. And the weather's great. It's very moderate, the weather there. It never gets too hot, never gets too cold.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, let's check in with a couple who's planning their own vacation to this beautiful island.
So, Vance, are we going to take a vacation this summer?
Well, I'm really busy at work, and the boss expects me to finish some big projects, and...
That's what you said last year, and we didn't go anywhere.
And I've been doing some research on some cruises in the Caribbean.
Really? You've actually been looking into some vacation destinations?
Oh, yeah. And I think I found one. St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
I like the sound of that. St. Croix is one of the premier scuba diving and snorkeling spots in the Caribbean.
It has quite a history. There were many sugar plantations there in the 1700s and 1800s, and some of them have been restored as historic sites.
I remember watching a TV show about St. Croix a few years ago. They featured a place called the Estate Wim Museum.
Yes, it's listed on several lists, including the UN's Slave Route Sites of Remembrance.
Fortunately, slavery was abolished there in 1848. Unfortunately, most of the sugar industry declined in the mid-1800s when beet sugar was developed in America and Europe.
In addition to Wim, there is also a botanical garden, which is built around the ruins of another famous plantation, Estate St. George.
I think we can see an old lime kiln there that was used to make bricks and some water flumes that transported various items.
You seem to know a lot about St. Croix.
Well, I've been doing some research myself. I wasn't going to let another summer pass with no vacation.
That sounds good to me, Tina. I'll call the travel agent to make our plans.
Well, I'm so glad you joined us, and maybe you're planning your own vacation now. But don't go too soon, because we'll be back tomorrow with a brand new month with Advanced. So we'll see you then. Until then, this is Naomi,
Bill,
and Amanda
saying
goodbye.